the small town at the foot of the mountain. A large sun was setting distance. The small town is Leng Tong. Opposite the town, rows of temples clouded in forest on the slope of Lishan Mountain. This was the famous Hua Qi Pool. 3,000 years ago, Chang'an was the capital of China's second greatest dynasty. Here was the background of Xi'an incident. This is what the 26-year-old New Zealand journalist James Bergman said of Xi'an in 1936. After the Xi'an incident, Bergman came to Xi'an from Beiping and made interviews for 44 days and reported the incident to the world. This made the New Zealander a worldwide fame. In the winter of 1936, saw many prominent personages of the time, like Zhang Xueliang, Yang Hucheng, Chiang Kai-shek, Song Meiling, Zhou Enlai, and others. The September 18th incident in 1931 pushed China to the verge of extinction. In 1935, Shanghaiguan Pass fell, and North China was in danger. Japan was trying to control North China by a so-called campaign of autonomous administration of five provinces. Chiang Kai-shek's government insisted on internal order before resistance against aggression. The homeless Northeastern Army was moved to Shanxi, and they and the local 17th Route Army were ordered to eliminate the Red Army. The Northeastern Army's commander Zhang Xueliang was blamed as a general of non-existence, but he still carried out Chiang Kai-shek's order. In northern Shanxi, the miraculous Red Army, after the fatiguing long march, was still combat-worthy. From September to November 1935, they annihilated Zhang Xueliang's three divisions and gained a footing in northern Shanxi. The Manchin government cancelled the designation of two divisions of the Northeastern Army. The code showed that Zhang Xueliang lost confidence in Chiang Kai-shek. On the night of April 9, 1935, Zhang Xueliang met Zhou Enlai in Yan'an and reached a secret ceasefire agreement. Chiang Kai-shek kept an eye on Xi'an. Rumors about Zhang Xueliang continually came from Xi'an. The ancient city attracted the attention of more and more people. It was then Edgar Snow and Helen Snow, Smedley, Bergman, came to witness the storm. Their reports revealed the incident to the world, and they became participants of the Chinese history. Edgar and Helen Snow headed for Xi'an after the December 9th movement in 1935. Eager to learn about the Red Army, Snow arrived in Xi'an in June 1936 and interviewed General Yang Hucheng of the Northwestern Army and President Shao Lizi of Shanxi Province. All signs showed it's possible for him to visit the Red Army. In late June, Snow got a chance to visit the area controlled by the Red Army as the first international journalist. Thanks to the peace between the Red Army and Zhang Xueliang Yang Hucheng's armies, Snow was able to stay there for several months. He interviewed communist leaders Mao Zedong, Zhu De, Zhou Enlai and others. He felt the delicate change in northern Shanxi. By late October, when he returned to Xi'an, He said he sensed the tension between General Zhang Xueliang and Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek. In 1936, Helen received her husband's letter and arrived in Xi'an. But by then, the Nanjing government had been on alert to the situation in Xi'an. Helen couldn't visit northern Shanxi. In Helen's eyes, Xi'an was a majestic ancient city that seemed to have been built to prevent an American woman with natural feet. Before long, with the help of communists Wang Ling, Zhang Zhaolin, and Liu Ding, she got an opportunity to interview Zhang Xueliang. This luxury compound was the political and military center of Xi'an. General Zhang Xueliang presented his view vehemently to the American journalist. He hoped to convey through international media his determination to fight Japanese aggressors. Helen was the only woman foreign journalist in Xi'an. It was Zhang's tactic to choose Helen as a vehicle of his voice. Mr. An Wei knows Helen very well. Helen knew the value of a report. Though the report was modified by Zhang Xueliang, the Bell Tower Telegraph Office refused to send it. Helen decided to send it from Beiping. On October 5th, she went to Beiping and sent out the report with the title, Rather Red Army Than Japanese. She wrote that Zhang Xueliang's army had trouble and had been reduced from 250,000 to 130,000 men. She said the soldiers were homesick and became increasingly indignant towards the Nanjing government's policy of non-resistance. Helen Snow's report on Zhang Xueliang and the situation in Xi'an aroused strong repercussion. People felt a storm was brewing in the ancient city. When the Snows sorted out what they gathered in Beiping, they gave up the opportunity to another journalist, Agnes Smedley. In 1929, Smedley went to Shanghai as a correspondent of Frankfurt Zeitung. In 1936, her friends Song Qingling and Lu Xun proposed that she went to Xi'an for a chance to see the Red Army. In September, an invitation of Liu Ding, she went to Xi'an. She lodged in Hua Qingpu Hotel. She said that the hotel was tranquil, free from the noises as in Shanghai. At the end of November, she and other guests had to leave the hotel, making room for Chiang Kai-shek.
Smedley moved to Xijing Hotel. She didn't like this ugly place, which, however, was the modernist building in the city of Xi'an at that time. On December 4th, Chiang Kai-shek came. Various rumors made him uneasy. He came to supervise war against the Communist Party. 300,000 troops were gathering at Tongguan, and 50 fighters and bombers landed on Xi'an Airport. He wanted to wipe up communists in 3 months. Chiang Kai-shek's retinue and high officials of Kuomintang like Chen Cheng, Wei Li Huang, Jiang Dingwen, and Zhu Shaoliang dwelt in Xijing Hotel. The rumor said they came to replace Zhang Xueliang. Spies ran amok. Communists and pro-communists were on the blacklist. Even Zhang Xueliang's secretary, Miao Jianqiu, was on a wanted list and had to leave Xi'an. On December 9, 1936, students of Xi'an marched to mark the anniversary of Beiping Students' December 9th movement. They called all parties to stop civil war and resist Japanese aggressors. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Smedley joined the marchers. Some pictures of the march might have been shot by Smedley. Near Baqiao, Zhang Xueliang stopped the students, promising to answer the people with deeds in a week. None realized that Xi'an as a powder keg had been ignited. Zhang Xueliang honored his promise 3 days later. On the early morning of December 12th, Smedley had passed a sleepless night hearing fierce gunshots. Later, she recalled, "I paced up and down in my room. I heard hoarse shouts and emotional cries from the corridor. My heart seemed to stop beating. I heard glass being kicked and break on the ground. People rushing here and there, shouts and curses everywhere." Smedley didn't know it was a well-prepared mutiny. High officials in Xijing Hotel became prisoners. Xi'an Airport, the railway station, and post offices were controlled by soldiers. The most intense fight took place at Ling Tong. Most of Chiang Kai-shek's guards were arrested. Chiang, in his pajamas, fled to Lishan. At dawn, he was found by soldiers. Smedley was excited. A young officer gave her a copy of Zhang Xueliang Yang Hucheng's telegraph to the whole nation, putting forward 8 proposals, including reforming the Nanjing government by incorporating all parties for national salvation, termination of civil war, releasing political prisoners, lifting the ban on People's Patriotic Movement, safeguarding freedom of association. Smedley anticipated what she was experiencing was bound to change China's history. For nights running, she sat at her radio and said news in English to the world. The international journalist who was in the eye of the cyclone and bore influence on the incident was William Donald from Australia. From 1928 to 1934, he had been Chiang Shui-liang's advisor. In October 1934, he became Chiang Kai-shek's personal advisor. In Xi'an incident, he helped the two parties. He was the person acceptable by both sides. Xi'an became the focus of China and the world. People rushed to the streets, talking and holding demonstrations. Other cities were in confusion. No one was sure if Chiang Kai-shek was living or dead. The Nanjing government split regarding to the solution of the incident. Pro-Japanese generals such as He Yingqing assembled troops for a war. William Donald knew Chiang Shui-liang would not hurt Chiang Kai-shek. On December 14th, he and Colonel Huang Renlin, trusted by Song Meiling, flew from Luoyang to Xi'an. William Donald and Chiang Shui-liang talked and then saw Yang Hucheng. Later, they together saw Chiang Kai-shek. Chiang Kai-shek shed tears. Donald handed Song Meiling's letter. Donald told the New York Times, Reuters, and other news agencies that Chiang Kai-shek's life was not in danger. That night, Song Meiling wrote in her diary that she saw the light of hope. On December 16th, Donald returned to Nanjing with Chiang Kai-shek's orders to stop attacking Xi'an. A cartoon on the city wall showed the Northeastern Army, the 17th Route Army, and the Red Army together face the crisis. Red Army arrived at Guangzhou, ready for anything untoward. TV Song flew to Xi'an again. 2 days later, Song Meiling came too. Before coming to Xi'an, Song Meiling had asked Donald how she should face Chiang Shui-liang. Donald told her to be composed. This picture on a newspaper of that time showed Song Meiling smiling. With the intervention of Donald and others, Chiang Kai-shek agreed to see the communist leader Zhou Enlai. When many cried to kill Chiang, the Central Committee of the Communist Party had the whole situation in mind and decided to solve the incident by peaceful means. As Chiang promised to stop civil war and fight Japanese, Chiang Shui-liang and Yang Hucheng decided to set him free. Song Weiling said, Donald set the foundation, TV Song built the wall, and I put the roof. Smedley saw Chang set free. On December 25th, people were told to meet General Fu Zuoyi at the airport. But when a cart arrived, the crowd saw Chiang Kai-shek and his retinue getting off. People were puzzled. The plane disappeared from the site. Few knew that Chang Xueliang was on board the plane too. On the following day, the exhausted Chiang Kai-shek returned to Nanjing. Chiang Xueliang had not anticipated that he would lose freedom since then. As Smedley saw Chiang Kai-shek set free, James Bertrand was hurrying to Xi'an. On December 12th, he learned of the incident from tabloid and went to see Snow and Helen. Snow and Helen encouraged him to go to Xi'an as correspondent. He came with a Northeastern Army soldier. That soldier, in disguise of a merchant, was none other than Miao Jianqiu. All entries to Xi'an were blocked by armies who had come to punish Zhang Xueliang and Yang Huteng. Bertrand found Xi'an was a city on alert. He arrived at Xi'an on December 27th. By way of Miao Jianqiu, he got to know many young officers of the Northeastern Army. Most of them took part in the mutiny. On the second day, he visited Hua Qingpu and learned many details of the mutiny. Sun Mingqiu, commander of Zhang Xueliang's Guards Battalion, Zhang's secretary Ying Dequan, and Miao Jianqiu were key figures of the mutiny. Sun Mingqiu was the man who carried Chiang Kai-shek on his back from among rocks on Lishan Mountain on December 12th. Bertrand found it amusing that Chiang Kai-shek's name could be interpreted as among the rocks. As Chiang Kai-shek and Zhang Xueliang left, the incident dramatically came to a stop. It was not the conclusion yet. The whole situation lasted until February 1937, when the Central Army entered Shanxi Province. Northeastern Army moved east. Yang Huteng's 17th Route Army and the Red Army were reorganized. Zhang and Yang's destiny were doomed to change. Thank you. Different journalists reflected on the incident in different ways. Snow vividly described the situation after Chiang Kai-shek was set free. Some won victory, some suffered setbacks, but all duels were like those on stage. All combating parties shouted brandishing swords, but in fact none touched the other. In the end, both the winner and loser remain dignified. Smedley's conclusion was Xi'an incident ended with a kind of local failure, but with a national victory. A unified China slowly and with throes came to rejuvenation. A few months later, the Lu Guoqiao Marco Polo Bridge incident on July 7, 1937, opened up the nationwide resistance against Japanese aggression. Again, international journalists and Chinese people spent militant times.